Beyond Violence is a nonprofit in Berwick which has provided both help and hope to those undergoing situations of domestic violence and abuse. Executive Director Jennifer Campbell says programs for adults and children present positive options to begin the healing process and move forward. Jennifer Campbell takes the story from here.
Beyond Violence started in 1997 by my predecessor. Our mission is to service victims and survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault and their significant others by empowering their decisions to do what is best for them. That is a reason why our website is so positive, because with all the negative in the world, we want to focus on the positive. We want to bring their self-esteem up. It would be very easy for us to be Debbie Downers and keep them in that crisis state that they come in, but we want them to see that there is positivity out there and that we are there as a support system. We are there to help them empower to make those positive decisions in their life. I never, never, ever tell a woman when she walks in the door what she can and can't do. Now, obviously, in the shelter, there are rules for certain reasons, but we want her to make her life decisions for her and her children. We could sit down and help her look at the pros and cons of every decision that she's going to make, but in the end, it's her decision, not ours.
So you give her the option to choose, but you also have a terrific team that not only works with the adults, but also the children. So I was wondering if you might be able to tell me about your staff.
Absolutely. If I didn't have the team behind me, Beyond Violence wouldn't be able to do what it does. In my adult counselor role is Tanya Gallagher. She has been with me for over 10 years. I know they say everybody's replaceable, but if Tanya were to ever leave Beyond Violence, she'd be hard to replace. Just the community connections that she has made to empower our residents for job searches and with landlords for suitable permanent housing is just unmatchable. Not only that, her compassion for our victims is outstanding. She is there 1,000% for our victims. And then piggybacking on her is our youth counselor advocate, Brianne Steinruck, who is newer to our organization. She's in her second year. Her heart is with the children. She has three children of her own, so it kind of helps her navigate the youth program very well. She goes into our Berwick School District to be there for any youth who self-identify as needing help with family dynamics, family conflict, teen dating violence. So the team is what makes Beyond Violence. It's not just a one-man band.
Women are nurturers, and many of them have the hope that they'll meet someone and get married and have a family. And then they may choose someone who is on the same page, but then they really don't know what the undercurrent is. Maybe they are not given the car, or maybe deciding that they'll be the sole individual taking care of the finances. And then there's gaslighting, that if something does go wrong, then you're the one to blame for this. How can we notice that a little bit better?
I always say domestic violence victims are in their own bubble. They're such a unique victim versus somebody who is a victim of crime by an acquaintance or a stranger. This is somebody that you've grown intimate with. This is somebody that you love and you feel that loves you back. And it happens over a period of time. If the first date was bad, would you go back on that second date? The answer to that is no. So it's that honeymoon phase in the very beginning. They're the most wonderful person. They treat you extremely well. Even into early years of marriage, that can stay in that honeymoon phase. But they slowly take that control. It may not be physical right away. It might just be some name calling, not to minimize name calling, but name calling, telling them that it's their reason that they're in a bad mood that day. And then it just expands upon that. Sometimes it turns into physical push or shove, and then it turns into, you know, more injuries, hair pulling, bruises being left due to kicking, hitting, biting. Most times they isolate them from their own family and friends. They do take away their car. They may prevent them from having a job, or if they are allowed to have a job, they don't have access to their paychecks. They take away any means that they think is possible for them to leave that situation, including destroying birth certificates, social security cards of the victim and the children. I can't tell you how many times we have to help women replace birth certificates and social security cards because that is a form of power and control. The abuser will feel if they take all of that away, there's no way they can make it on their own.
It sounds like a total stripping of identity.
Yes, yes. And their self-esteem is pretty much non-existent when they walk in that door. And that is why we try to focus on positives. We have actually a board in our lobby that we try to put a quote of the day every day to use in a sentence and just to take your mind off of your situation and think about our positive quote and try to use that word of the day in a sentence.
So tell me the process that you're able to bring these women back to feeling good about themselves and feeling more positive about themselves.
I look at it as a three-sided pyramid, with one side being basic living needs, food, water, nourishment. One side being financial literacy, and that includes job searching, saving money, looking for suitable housing for themselves and their children. And then that third side being the emotional side, the emotional needs of that person. And when you build a pyramid, the base of the pyramid is very big, and you have to work on all three sides at the same time, or your pyramid's going to collapse. You can't just give somebody all their basic needs and expect the other two sides to build at the same time. You have to work on them all at the same time. So when a woman comes into shelter, it's very time consuming because you have to work on all three sides at the same time and build that pyramid up. So the hope is by the time she's ready to leave shelter, you're at that apex and she doesn't need the counseling several times a week and she doesn't need the budgeting several times a week. She's just checking in saying, hey, I'm still working towards my goal plans. This is what I'm doing. And she reaches the top of that apex and she's moving out into her own.
We're seeing lots of newscasts of victims who have survived some horrific things on television giving their testimony. And each of them on their lapel or their blouse, they have a butterfly. Can you tell me the meaning of a butterfly?
That is very interesting. We use the butterfly as our mascot, so to speak, quite frequently. I actually have a butterfly tattoo on my wrist myself. A butterfly comes from a caterpillar, and that cocoon opens up into a beautiful creature and is able to fly free. And that is why we use the butterfly. A new life, a new beginning. A lot of times the butterfly will be also used with the semicolon, meaning your story's not over. You're just starting a new chapter.
That's a beautiful way to put it in a visual sense. Women come to you and maybe they have a few young children who witnessed some arguing, something a little bit louder than normal. And the woman might say to you, but I do want to keep the family intact. Good idea or not?
I say not a good idea. Don't underestimate what children understand and what they see, even as young babies. This woman came into shelter probably about 2 years ago. She had a child who was in second grade, and then she had a baby who was only 3-4 months old. That baby heard so much screaming and yelling in his short little life. All he did was scream and cry day and night. The only thing that would quiet him is if she pushed him in the stroller. That poor woman at 2-3 o'clock in the morning was out in our parking lot pushing the stroller back and forth because that is the only way that he would be quiet. He wouldn't sleep, but that is the only thing that would calm him down. She was absolutely exhausted. He was so tense, this poor child. One of our staff members actually took a baby receiving blanket and just gently rubbed his cheek one day and said, I know this is going to be tough, but we're going to try this. We're going to let him cry it out and just gently soothe his cheek and just be very calming. It took about 15, 20 minutes for him to realize that he was safe and it was self-soothing. And from that point on, he was a totally different baby. I would not have believed it if I hadn't witnessed it myself. This child then would sleep at night. He would laugh, he would coo, and that is something that this mother had not seen from this child. So no, I say, back to the original question, it is not in the best interest to stay together in a bad situation for the sake of the kids. It does more harm to those children than it does good.
When does a woman know that it's time to get some help and come to Beyond Violence?
Well, statistically, it takes a woman 7 times to leave before she leaves for good. Some it takes more, some it takes less. It's a process. It's not an easy process, especially if there's extreme physical abuse involved. Because if you know typically that cycle of abuse, that honeymoon period, that pushing you to the edge of the cliff, being abusive, and then pulling back and saying, oh, I love you, I'm sorry, I won't do it again, and going around that vicious cycle. When that woman breaks that cycle and leaves, that's the fear of the unknown. She has no idea how that person's going to react, and that's the most scary moment for a woman because she doesn't know what's going to happen. So for everybody, it's different as to when they know that they've had enough and when they know they need to get out. We do a lot of educational outreach that if you're experiencing any of these issues, at least reach out and talk to us and know your options and know maybe some things that you can do to create those boundaries at home, even if you decide to stay.
When a woman does decide to say, okay, I do need a little bit of help, and she does have to make that really scary move forward, How can you protect her from not being hurt?
We have the emergency shelter where it's a safe house. Our doors are locked all the time and nobody is just allowed in. We don't just open the door to anybody. So in that aspect, we can keep her safe in that moment. We do safety planning, knowing that if she has a job or she takes the kids to school and she takes the same route every day, taking different routes, not keeping the same routine, breaking up that routine. There are legal aspects that if there is physical abuse, she can obtain what is called a protection from abuse order, PFA. We can help with that process for those victims in Columbia County. Every county has its own agency that can help with those petitions and abuse orders. And that gives the authorities a leg to stand on that if the abuser reaches out and tries to contact the victim, it gives them the leg to stand on to arrest them and charge them with indirect criminal contempt charge. But I'm going to be completely honest. Safety planning is the most important thing because if somebody's going to do harm to you, even take your life, a piece of paper is not going to stop that. So you have to safety plan. You have to keep your guard up, so to speak. And that's not to scare any victim. That's just reality, to know people, places, and things and who's around you. There was a victim several years ago who she had broken up with her boyfriend, and she knew that he was stalking her. She told people, "I know he's stalking me, but he'll never hurt me. He'll never hurt me." Unfortunately, her life ended one night after work. He had followed her to work, waited for her in the parking lot, and he killed her after work. And this was a woman who thought, "This person, I know he's stalking me. I know he follows me everywhere, but he'll never hurt me." If you see any warning signs, don't just let that go. Talk about those warning signs. Talk about it with the person you're dating or you're married to. If that's not possible, talk about it with somebody who's experienced in these things. Don't let something build up, because over time it'll build up. And a victim doesn't necessarily realize they're in a bad relationship right away, especially if it's something that happens over a progression of time where just that power and control just slowly takes over. And they're so gaslighted that they think they are at fault. And then their self-esteem becomes nothing. So whenever you see a warning sign, definitely reach out. Talk to somebody about it. See if this is a relationship you should continue or if you should put the brakes on. You know, sometimes that person is willing to want to get help and want to change their ways. I know in the Berwick School District, we take a educational program called Breaking the Cycle, where we talk to middle school and high school students about healthy and unhealthy relationships, your rights and responsibilities in a relationship. And in the middle school age, we geared more towards social relationships. And then in high school, we geared more towards dating relationships. But if I can keep just one person who is a potential abuser from thinking about their actions and not abusing their significant other, then that program's a success. But I would love to just stop one potential abuser from being an abuser with that program.
Do abusers know they are abusers? That they have the ability to maybe strip away an identity of a person they said they loved?
When I talk about this, I'm not making any excuse for an abuser, because treating somebody any way but the way they should be treated is wrong. Most times you will see that the abuser themselves has a very low self-esteem. Something happened in their childhood, something happened at their workplace, but their self-esteem themselves, they don't feel good about themselves. If you don't feel good about yourself, how are you going to treat your partner the way they should be treated? It's almost next to impossible. So I see that cycle, again, not minimizing, but I think they should recognize that, hey, maybe I need some help. I think the stigma needs to be broken, that it's okay to ask for help if you're not feeling okay. Also, mental health issues is through the roof, and there's not a lot of help. There's very long waiting lists for people with mental health issues to get the help that they need. That doesn't help situations either.
Over the last few years, have you seen an increase in domestic violence?
I have. And I don't know necessarily if it's because domestic violence is more prevalent or people just aren't sitting back anymore and letting it happen. I haven't been able to distinguish that part yet, because I can remember stories, you know, grandparents and great-grandparents as I was older telling stories about, oh, the guy down the street, he never treated his wife very well, and they were together 70 years. Domestic violence has always been a problem. It's just something that wasn't talked about, and now we talk about it more. But I can tell you the correlation between domestic violence and mental health issues has definitely increased.
I know that the climate of our country is become so much more combative. So does that give an abuser more free rein to do what he does?
I would say yes. I think they don't fear law enforcement. They don't fear punishment like they should. Mm-hmm. So I have to agree. When you look at like bigger society and like the country, there is so much bad out there. Then when you trickle it down to communities, I think they do think that they can do whatever they want. So yeah, I would say definitely.
I'm going back to the baby who was comforted by the blanket on their cheek. Sure. I'd like to speak about the children. Now, that baby was comforted just by that softness on their cheek. And all of a sudden, everything was okay. Everything leveled out. But maybe you might have children that will remember memories of mom and dad having bad arguments or maybe seeing some domestic violence happening. How do you deal with someone who's 5, 6, 7 years old?
So my youth counselor does art therapy with them, talks with them, letting them know they're in a safe place, talking about their feelings, kind of giving them some coping skills if they're in that situation again, things that they can do. We've heard kids divulge a lot of information, disclose a lot of information, and if it's something that they themselves have witnessed the abuse or have been abused themselves, obviously we childline that and hand that over to the proper authorities. But the kids have my heartstrings. There is no doubt about it. I can tell you, Christmas time is a double-edged sword for me at the shelter, because there have been so many children in the 22 years that I've been there who have said, this is the best Christmas I've ever had. No child should say that the best Christmas is in a shelter. We have great support in our community who make sure that those kids' wish lists for Christmas are met. I want to give a shout out to the Maconaqua Sporting Club in Maconaqua. Those ladies auxiliary go above and beyond for our children in the shelter. A couple of years ago, we had a mom come into shelter. It was right after Thanksgiving. She had a 15-year-old, a 14-year-old, a 6-year-old, and an 8-month-old baby. They came from such an isolated, controlling environment that 6-year-old boy never even saw Santa Claus or even saw a parade. So thankfully, they came in time to see the Berwick Christmas parade. It actually goes a block from the shelter, so they were able just to walk to the corner and see the parade, and he was able to see Santa Claus for the first time, and he was 6 years old. The 14 and 15-year-old, they were cyber-schooled because the father pulled them out of brick-and-mortar school because he didn't want them leaving the house. I mean, at that point, it was 2024. That sort of thing still exists.
How stifling it is for the children not being able to socialize and make friends and learn about themselves and learn about their talents and their gifts.
Yeah.
How can you open them up to make them realize that even though they were treated poorly, they still have a life to live, and how can they live it normally?
The best thing we do is by role modeling and showing them positive interaction. A lot of our mothers come to us in a fight or flight situation. That's the life that they've lived, fight or flight. So not all of their attention has been on these children, and it's not their fault. It's the situation that they were given. Sometimes just sitting down and reading a child a book, a young child, that's all they need, knowing that there's somebody positive there. I have had so many children come sit in my lap in my office and we read a story. That's the best thing for them, showing positiveness, letting them talk about their feelings, but letting them know that life doesn't need to be about screaming and yelling and hearing all of the things that go along with that and all the name calling. There's so much evil in the world that we just try to create a positive environment.
I'm thinking about the educators now. When the children are in school and all of a sudden they're talking about home or sometimes draw a picture of your family, do you have courses or any kind of classes for educators that they might be able to recognize some of the signs of domestic abuse at home, given the children's drawings or maybe some of the things they may say?
We try to when we go out for that Breaking the Cycle program. And that's interesting that you bring that up, because the program that we take into the middle school, several times the teachers will say, okay, the next class that comes in, the kid that sits in the back on the right-hand side, he's the class clown and he'll do anything and everything to interrupt the class. And those kids will come in, and that kid who's the class clown, I'll recognize him. We have dealt with him and his family before. And he's that class clown because he's looking for that positive attention. The teacher has no idea. And I can't divulge that information. That information is confidential. But I wish I could pull the teacher inside and say, listen, you don't understand what this child goes home to every night and why he's acting like the class clown. So we try to tell them to be mindful. They have no idea what situations, if there's food to eat at home that night. So we try to tell them.
Again, nutrition is a big thing. Art therapy is another big thing. And you mentioned that briefly, yes, talking about pictures and so forth, the colors they use and mm-hmm. some of the pictures that they draw. I mean, what can you get out of a picture when you see something like a child who hears the emotional abuse happening at home?
A lot of times you can tell by their drawings what they've come from and what's in the forefront of their mind. They're not good pictures. I would say they're almost pictures of nightmares, if I could put it into words. And we let them get their feelings out. Oftentimes, you know, if it's something that we feel that is definitely beyond our scope of help, we let the mother know that you might want to get, you know, some trauma help. I've seen some scary pictures.
You know, we've been talking about some of the dark sides of emotional abuse and physical abuse. But when you take a look at your website, there's such an upbeat vibe. There was one section of your website where you had a letter from someone who came to you and was in a very bad relationship, and she started going through some of the therapies that you offer at your nonprofit organization, and she said that her life is better than ever. Everything is getting so much better. Her confidence is back. That was such a beautiful letter to read, knowing that she took the time to put pen to paper and say thank you.
Mm-hmm. We've had numerous women who have said to us, thank you. If I hadn't come here, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing today. I know there's big fish to fry for these women, but I focus on the small things. I try to make it a point to make sure that everybody smiles every day at least once. When the kids come back from school to the shelter, provided I'm in my office, I make it a point to ask them, each one as they come through the door, how's your day at school? How are you doing today? Or if I happen to be there early in the morning and they're walking out to school, have a good day. I did that to my children growing up. To me, it's showing the mothers, kind of guiding them into interacting positively with their children and taking their mind off of that fight or flight. And it shows the kids that somebody's invested. Somebody's there.
Jennifer, you amaze me because you and your team, you're working with a lot of really heavy stuff.
Yes.
So how do you kind of decompress?
So when there's instances where we don't have any clients in our office, we do debrief with each other, but then we're a tight team and we learn how to laugh, how to enjoy each other's company, how to ask each other how we're doing, eating lunch together whenever possible. I know that it's important because we do deal with a lot of heavy stuff, and a lot of times my board will ask me, how are you not a chain smoker, and rock back and forth sucking your thumb, and I'm like, well, some days I wonder that myself. We have to try to remember why we're there, but also that we're human too. You know, there's been several countless very emotional situations that we've gone through, and if we have to, we cry to each other to let that out. If we're just so mad, we take a walk around the block, because there's just sometimes instances where the abuser just makes us so angry for the victim, or, you know, things happen in court that we don't particularly care for. We have to get that out. I can tell you only one time in 22 years did I show raw emotion, and it was in front of children. I had to send children back to their father, who was just absolutely terrible. They had to go for a visitation, and that was definitely rough. That was a day I do not want to relive. But we know that as staff, we have to do self-care and we have to take care of us.
And again, because you're such a strong trio, it's wonderful that you do eat lunch together and, again, talk things out. You have to.
Yes.
You know, because you've got children of your own, you've got lives of your mm-hmm. own. How do you separate the work life and other families that you're dealing with and then going back to your family and being happy and trying to keep a harmonious home?
Well, it's not always easy. Just because my hours are 9 to 5 doesn't mean my job is 9 to 5. does not mean that I don't carry the weight of my residence and shelter home with me, or that I worry about the decisions that they're making, or worry that they're going to be safe if they're leaving for the night or going to work. So I carry that with me a lot. My husband will tell you that I bring too much home. He also understands my job. He knows that it's more than just a job to me, and that I do care. You have to try to have that balance. You have to know that when you have somebody getting on their feet, that you have to have that boundary that when you're not in the office, you're not in the office. However, there are some situations where the crisis is still going on and you make yourself available. It's a fine line.
It's the kind of work you wanted to go into. And it's one thing to read things in a textbook, but it's another thing to see it in real life and try to deal with it in real life.
Oh, yeah. It's not easy at all. It's not something you can learn from any textbook. We do have interns from now and then, and I had an intern who had worked for Children and Youth who was interning with us because she was furthering her education. And her second day into the internship, and this is a woman who, and from a Children and Youth aspect, had told women who were living with domestic violence that, listen, you either get you and your children out or we're going to place your children in foster care. She came to me and she said, I never realized how hard shelter life is. Because not only are they dealing with their own crisis, but they're all of a sudden living in a strange place with strange people, strange common areas. Shelter's not easy, and I know nobody wants to be in shelter. Grateful that we're there and they have the opportunity, but nobody wants to be there. It's tough.
Even though it is a tough situation, your team does everything in their power to try to put an upswing to it, pumping in positive things that people should think of that are going to help them. Self-help things like breathing and taking some time for yourself, things along those lines. And clearly, a lot of women take them seriously because they're helped and they feel as though they've gotten stronger.
Yes.
This is a hard job. So what would you like your nonprofit to do in the forthcoming years under your administration?
Well, I still want to see us to continue to grow. I want us to continue offering the services that we're offering, expand our services, and reach out to as many people as we possibly can. It's definitely not easy work, but I feel it's work that needs to be done. And I just hope that through the grace of God that we continue with the funding that we need to be there until we no longer have to be there. I mean, it would be great to say that domestic violence doesn't exist anymore and there's no need for our services. Unfortunately, I don't think that's anytime soon. But as long as there's victims out there, I hope that we exist.
I know you carry a lot of the weight of the troubles of many people that come into your shelter. What are some of the more positive things that you felt knowing that I'm here, I'm trying my best, and I think things are working?
Anytime that we get a picture with somebody with keys to an apartment in their hand is a great day. And most of our residents, that's what ends up happening. We work with them financial literacy skills so that they can be self-sufficient. And so that's a great feeling, especially knowing like a woman who has never done it by herself with just her and her children. Getting her to the point where she realizes she can do it and she does do it and gets those keys to that apartment.
What should someone do should they hear or witness domestic violence?
So if they hear an altercation going on, don't intervene yourself. Call the police, making sure that person is safe, doing a welfare check. If you're able to talk to that victim away from the abuser, giving them the information to get help. There's the National Domestic Hotline that they can call to find out where the help is in their local community. If they're in Columbia County, they can reach out to Beyond Violence 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And most agencies are like that, 24 hours a day. See what options are available to them. They may not be ready to leave. That choice has to be theirs, but at least they know that there's options there.
When I first spoke with you and I said, I'm really interested in knowing a little bit more about Beyond Violence, you said, it's domestic violence, it's heavy stuff. But is there a hopeful bend in this story?
Yes, even though there is a lot of heavy stuff, the good bend would be when somebody does leave, they get their feet grounded, they get that income coming in, and they move forward themselves and their children, moving into that apartment, doing it themselves. There's many clients who come back a year, 2 years later, say, hey, I'm still doing great. I'm still in that same apartment. So there is hope. It doesn't all have to be heavy, although a lot of it is. But the hope at the end of the rainbow is watching them fly away as a butterfly.
Special thanks to Jennifer Campbell, Executive Director of Beyond Violence, a nonprofit organization in Berwick, Pennsylvania, providing hope, help, and a new start. For WVIA's Community Connection, I'm Lisa Mazzarella.